Three, two, one.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Maybe you should quit acting like a bitch.
Like a bitch.
Pizza, pizza.
Making it for young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that I like it bad. But the show is go direct to DLNTS.org. And IRC channels are linuxtech.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 898 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Happy spring.
We have Joel.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
We have Joe.
Hello.
And we have Rich. Fly Rich. Where'd he go?
They got him. Oh, yeah, he left the channel.
He flew on out of here. What happened? Well, he's back en route. Maybe he's having an audio problem.
Well,
live from the Houston Top Hat Southern Command.
There he is. He just wanted to get in before he goes in mini PCs.
Nah, I don't think we're mini PCing tonight.
Wow. So, we were talking about it in the pre-show. Southeast Linux Fest goes virtual again.
I think they should enjoy dangerous freedom.
Well, you gotta blame it on the North Carolina guy. I would have went too. I would have went this year.
I was in Texas without a mask all weekend.
Ooh.
But, well, they did remove, you know, all the mask mandates.
From Texas, yeah.
There's still people in restaurants wearing masks.
Oh, yeah, there's still people.
I still wear a mask if I go out.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Although, my daughter is going to get her shot soon, and then hopefully the VA, I'll get my shot next month.
Okay.
Well, Joe, you know what I got for my birthday?
Your shot?
I got an appointment for Friday to get my first shot.
There you go.
I came in via email. I looked at that email like, man, is this a scam or what? But it wasn't.
I was excited. See, that's going to be a multifaceted rant. One, okay, the 11th is when I became eligible in those rules, okay? However, since that day, I've been trying to find an appointment. Good freaking luck. Because Ohio, there's not like a state like run system, at least not that I've looked at in the last day or so. They have a website, but it just links out to like Kroger's, Meijer's, and the various chains that are doing it. In Ohio, it's Kroger, Meijer, Giant Eagle, and Walgreens. CVS isn't doing it, I don't think. Although they might, I have to look.
Okay, who's clipping their nails?
It's me. I'm fidgeting with the power block, so I'm sorry. Anyway, but in most cases, like a Giant Eagle has this, which is a grocery store chain around here. They have this weird queuing system where you sit there, you go to their website, and you have to wait until it's your turn. And then when you get your turn, you find out they don't have any appointments. It's like, why did you waste my fucking time? Meijer actually has the safest, the nicest system in that you go ahead, put your name in there, and they'll send you a text when they have an appointment for you. which I haven't got the text yet. Kroger's is just, you know, not available, not available, not available. Now, I haven't tried. There are a couple in Columbus. There are a couple mass vaccination sites, like down at Ohio State. There's one, a couple other places, too. But I haven't actually looked into those just yet. I came close with Giant Eagle system in that I saw they had a date, but it was for a store that was all the way on the other side of town. But I go and click and say, yeah, I want that appointment. And this website spins and spins and spins and spins and never worked. So I didn't get it. So let's say this. The online systems for this suck. And if you think the federal government's going to make a better system for this, you're joking, because we all know what happened with Obamacare's website.
Well, I don't know.
Which I believe.
We have a system.
I was listening to that.
Put in my information a few months ago. That's all I had to do. That's all I had to do.
Interesting.
And here we are.
Like, you guys are just a bunch of chickens. You ought to just go out and get COVID. Be done with it.
Yeah, you got it. But, but yeah, so, I mean, it's just frustrating. And then the other frustrating thing is seeing the fucking crazy-ass misinformation over this vaccine. People are like, I mean, there's one point that people who don't want to get the vaccination have, and that is, yes, it's not as tested as most vaccines are, but it's not going to change your freaking DNA, and oh my god, all these other stupid freaking rumors going around the internet are just driving me insane. I'm like, you're fucking stupid. And I get it. I get it why people might not want to get it for it not being tested well enough, which, you know, is very, very possible. But I want to take my chances and get it. You know what I mean? When I can. And I think Friday they open it up to everyone 16 and older in the state. So, I definitely want to get it, but with that said, no Southeast Linux Fest this year. I would say there's a pretty good chance of Ohio Linux Fest. That is, you know, if they're still financially able to do it this year. One of the things that kind of worries me about, now Jeremy's deal, he was, you know, I've talked with him often on the financing and just talking about how he pulls off what he does, and I think that Southeast Linux Fest for 2022 in person, I think that's going to happen. You know, I don't think they're going to have a problem with it. I think they're probably any money they would have normally spent for deals with the Sheridan, it's probably going to be banked, you know, and they may have probably a better than ever fest in 2022. Now, Ohio Linux Fest, in my opinion, they weren't doing well for the 2 years prior to last year. So I'm not so sure about them, because the vendor room keeps getting smaller and smaller. I would not expect to see a huge vendor room at either of them, but, you know, the Southeast Linux Fest is probably going to be the least affected by vendors not wanting to set up booths and stuff. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, if the Linux Fest as we knew it goes away, it's going to make me sad, because that was one of the best things about my year, was going to places to see not just you guys, but guys like our dearly departed Pat Archibald and Matt Lord Drakenblut and 5150. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I can't forget.
Who am 50. I gonna spoon with if I go to Linux Fest?
Yourself.
No, I don't spoon
your
solo.
AR 15.
I'd rather spoon with an AR 10.
There you go.
Speaking of AR 10s, Pat, were you going to self and weren't going to be able to go with me to a shoot?
Yeah, possibly.
So does that mean you're available to go to the shoot that you haven't been going to?
Maybe.
You gotta let me.
There you go.
What are the dates again?
Is it the May 20th to the 23rd? It, whatever the weekend is in May, where it's the 20th.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, what I might do, since right now the Midwest Rap Festival is on for this year in Goshen, Indiana. It's tail end of June. Normally it's in the spring, but I think they got the tail end of June in Indiana. I don't know if I'm going to go or not. I'd like to.
You got
to
go. I can't believe you're not going. How many 3D printers do you have?
Two, technically.
Ooh,
one in storage, one here. Well, that's just temporary. Eventually I'm going to work on saving the money up to get a an SLA. So, but yeah, I'd really like to go. I was planning to go last year, of course, but we all know what happened. But right now, not counting the unknowns of Ohio Linux Fest, that's the only thing I know of this year that's actually going to happen at the current moment, you know, unless something changes. So, I don't know. I might. I may not. You know, because we'll just be in the house, maybe about a month or so. I'm guessing.
You're telling me you're not planning on being house poor? You better be house poor.
I don't know. I gotta have a lot to do to finish getting. Well, you know, the basics I'm gonna have. You know, but.
Oh yeah. Crap! We're talking about the house again.
Yeah, well, it's a big thing in my life now. So, it planted the technology. I got a 16-port switch coming for the home office. That's going to go right next to my cable modem when it gets installed when we move in. And
now is this a cable modem that you're leasing and not buying?
I actually am going to buy my cable modem this time just because. I want to be able to pick which one I want. I basically, when I go to buy one, I'm probably going to look for like the most basic one there is because I don't really want the routing functions to be built into the cable modem itself. And there's a good reason why you would want to do that when buying a cable modem, because even though you buy that cable modem, you own that cable modem when you buy it, they still have control of the software that runs on it.
I'll tell you what ticks me off is I forget whether it was DOCSIS, whatever, they went from one version
DOCSIS
to like
3,
a point change to like 3.1 and didn't tell
right.
me. So like at 9 a.m. Saturday morning, my modem worked, and
it
you know, 9:01, it didn't work. I come back from the gym like noon, I'm like, what the heck? And you know, they don't let you know, which it's like, really, guys? So you know you're making this change. You don't notify us that, you know, DOCSIS whatever is not going to be supported come tomorrow. And that was kind of a screwing.
That seems kind of pointless when you go from 3.0 to 3.1, but okay.
Yep.
you know, that's
you know
that's
this is the
to
thing
about
like
yeah.
Any one of us that do enterprise level systems, you know, you would run a scan on your network to make sure that whatever the new thing is, whether it's a new protocol, like let's just say it's IPv6, you'd be just checking that. Hey. Will all
right.
the devices on the network support IPv6 if I turn off IPv4? And,
right.
you know, again, I'm talking to somebody and they don't make decisions. They just answer phones. And I'm like, you mean you didn't run a query to check all the devices on the network to see if
right.
anyone would be terminated? And, yeah.
Interesting. So that'll be something I have to think about. I mean, I do have to, when I buy one, I'm going to have to make sure it's one that supports gig connections, because that's what I want. And I'm debating whether I want to pick up some extra nodes for my mesh network router. I have the Asus Zen, whatever it is. Asus's mesh network is what I have. I have three nodes, so I'll have one.
Asus
node
has
in the office.
Two mesh networks.
Yeah, I know they have two. I have the. Oh, I'm trying to think if there's a easy way to identify it visually. Not really.
Are you still using the what is it, RTAC68U?
Actually, I still have it. Technically, you know what? Technically, I could put that on there, but that one doesn't support Wi-Fi 6, which my new one does. So I don't know what that would do to the network speeds. I do know that once we get to the house, I'm going to set the routers up for the wired backhaul, because I'm going to have wires wherever they are. There's going to be one in there's four drops coming from my office, one into the great room, one into each bedroom. So mine is the Zen Wi-Fi AX Mini system. So those ones do not support a couple interesting things with mesh Wi-Fi systems. Depending which one you get, some of them support a wireless backhaul, which is a backhaul that is on something other than Wi-Fi. It's basically, so I don't know if it's proprietary or something built in the system, but it's a wireless backhaul. So basically, at that point, your wireless network doesn't suffer any speed degradation just by the backhaul of mesh network. Now, mine has support for wireless backhaul, but not on its own wireless thing. It basically does the backhaul right over the Wi-Fi network, so the speeds are slightly affected. I can't honestly tell because my internet is slow ass 50 megabit down from AT&T right now.
You're complaining about 50 megabit down?
Well, that's as fast as I can get, and I can get gigabit almost everywhere else in the county.
Wow.
including my home. So it's, you know, the new house is, I had higher than that when I lived in my old decrepit 20-year-old house. So
old decrepit 20-year-old house. Oh my gosh, my house is, oh my gosh, it's 21 years old.
Yeah, but yours is in better shape, though. And in Florida. So, but,
okay, I just did a test. I got 180 down, 11.9 up.
Yeah, I'm not even coming anywhere close to that. I don't even think I get close to 50. I think I get closer to between 20 and 30.
I don't need 180 down. I'll never use that.
See, for part of the problem is can I live with less speeds? Yes. But, like, here's what's going on all of my 50 meg downlink downlink right now. I got this, of course, and I've got my son's watching on Fubo TV. He's watching the PBA Scorpion Championship. And then my wife's probably watching, if I had to guess, probably a Hallmark channel on Fubo. So we got at least two 1080p streams going from the internet. And this, as far as I know, everything's working fine. You know, I can't really tell. You know, I'd have to look at the router's speed to see how much it's pulling down now. But the more that our family gets addicted to streaming things like from YouTube or from Fubo TV or something, the worse it's going to get. You know, considering that Netflix can support 4K streaming, and I have a 4K TV, at least one 4K TV now. when I move, I'm planning on getting another 4K TV.
And speaking of which, if you guys, anybody's interested in buying a 4K TV, big screen, you know, like 60, 70 inch TV, now's the
time
to buy.
Prices are damn cheap.
Post Super Bowl, TVs always go on sale. The bottom falls out of that market.
I seen a TV, like a 40 or 50 inch TV for like $300.
Less 40. Well, 4K. I bought a 1080p 40 inch TV for like $124. That was like an ONN with like a Roku built into it.
Yeah. Well, that's the most interesting part too, is even the dirt cheap ones are coming with either Roku or Android TV technology built into it.
See, I want Roku because then it's agnostic. Then I can get Amazon and YouTube.
Yes, I totally agree with that, actually, because I like how I have a 4K the 4K Roku box hooked to my old decrepit it's the oldest TV we have, 27 inch TV that's in our bedroom, and then our big TV that we bought right around Luke's graduation is 40 inch 4K with the Roku built in. And I'm not going to look anywhere else. When I look, any TV I want the Roku built in. Yeah. Eventually, that might come to bite me in the butt. But you know what? I'll just buy another TV.
Well, I really don't care if the TV's smart or not. In fact, I kind of like it when it's not smart, because then it just unplugs the stupid screen and then plug my Roku into it. And I don't have to do any settings or configuration.
But it's getting hard to find ones that aren't smart.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I could go either way, but I'm happy when it's not.
Yep, because I'm planning on... I'm looking at least a 40 for my home office. Just because I can, you know?
You know, we really barely watch TV anymore. I do have a 70 in the bedroom, and I almost never turn it on.
Yeah, really, I'm right there with you, Rich. It's kind of the same thing here.
And I never wanted a TV in the bedroom, but my wife was the one that wanted it.
My wife's the one that watches the one in the bedroom the most. You know, 9 times out of 10, if I'm binge watching something, I'm watching it on my iPad usually, or my phone.
Yeah, if I had eyes I could see my phone, I'd watch it on my phone.
Most of the time it's just because I want to watch something different than what my family would. Here you go. Best Buy Insignia 55-inch LED 4K Ultra High Def TV, $349.99. That's just an incredible deal.
So is that 120 hertz refresh rate?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's an Insignia, so probably not.
Because a lot of the stuff... you know, you might want 120 or 240. 120 is probably fine.
Let's see if it even tells me that. Hertz.
Okay. So, I can't tell. Maybe some people can tell when it's, you know, 60 versus 120 or 240. My wife
can't either.
Was pricing TVs at Walmart, and it was actually cheaper if you went to the website and bought it and picked it up at the store than if you got it out from the showroom floor at the store. So... just be a shrewd shopper. You know, also check Costco. Costco always has good deals.
But I'll probably buy one at Sam's Club because they also have good deals on TVs.
Oh, sure, yeah. Any of the box stores.
Oh, hell. I was there this past weekend, and my jaw dropped. I saw an 85-inch screen. I'm like, do I want something that large? Nope, I don't think it would look good in any room, even in my new house.
How big did you say?
85.
It was probably 85. Still a couple of $1,000.
No, actually, it was right. I think it's right around 900, if I remember right.
That's pretty good.
I think so.
You should have got it.
No, I don't have 900 to spend right now.
My bedroom's a decent size, and the 70-inch TV on the wall looks huge. I mean, it just
It just wouldn't look right. You know, that's the stage I'm at is when I'm looking at new TVs. You know, I think, would I like the 85-inch? Yes, but it would look stupid on any wall of my house.
Yeah, I think we have a 50 in the living room, and I knew when we got the 70 for the bedroom that the 50 was going to look small. Nobody's going to want to watch it. And that we'd have to get a bigger TV.
Now, Best Buy, I'll have to expand. I may have to do some more research in this, because that, if I were to buy something right away when we move in for my home office, that would be it right now, because I'd like to have something up there for, because what I'm probably going to do is when I go up there for the day for work, I'm probably going to grab whatever I'm going to eat for lunch, if it's a sandwich or something, and stick it in my mini fridge. That way, when it's time to eat, I can just grab it and go eat. And I'll have a microwave in my room too, so it could even be something frozen, because I could stick it in the little frozen section in my mini fridge, and it'll be fine until lunchtime.
Wait, so how long do you get for lunch?
Hour.
And you can't walk to the kitchen and make lunch?
I'm not saying I can.
I you know what? I eat right before my lunchtime. That way I can go take a goddamn nap in the middle of the day.
That's actually not a bad idea either.
But again, my office isn't that far from the kitchen that I can't grab my laptop and walk in and make lunch.
Yep. Well, my thing, I get what you're saying 100%,
Rich. Dude, he gets Uber Eats, and then he's got a robot to deliver it to him.
A lot of times,
he's like, Uber Eats to my house, and the second window on the left, just pass it through.
Yeah, just throw it in. It'll be open. Yeah.
It's a reverse drive-through window that he has.
You see, here's one of the problems I have. And Dan's also – well, actually, Dan, I think you are actually a technical manager, right? So
I don't know if I call myself
that. One of the
that.
Problems I have is everyone on the team likes to work with me, which that's not a bad problem to have. But part of the problem is the juniors really like me. So when they're lost on something and they need help, they freaking reach out to me. Oh, young if you mean by 20 and 30, but you know.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, I hope they're not employing underage people there. That would be a violation.
You're
of
getting
laws.
Ready to, yeah.
Child labor law.
Right. But no, I'll be getting ready to get ready to go to lunch, and all of a sudden I'll get a Slack from one of them, and I'm like, okay, I'll help you, and then before I know it, it's 2 p.m. and I have an eight lunch yet.
You know the answer to that is so like if the answer to that is I will help you right after lunch.
You know what? I've used that quite a bit.
I do it all the time.
I make some overnight oats, just leave them in the fridge, and then if I'm hungry, I just walk up to the fridge, grab it, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah. That's why I usually like I actually do like to cook lunch instead of just heating shit up in the microwave. But because of the weird wacky schedule that is my life, I quite often will buy like, you know, a couple Lean Cuisines, or actually those are the disgusting ones, but buy something like something that I like, you know, maybe something from Saffron Road or something frozen, and stick it in the freezer. That way I can grab that and microwave it up pretty quick and get something to eat. But I do prefer to eat, make my own lunch. Those things I usually try and make it something quick, you know, rarely cold, sometimes cold. You know, like I might buy some lunch meat, make me a sandwich or something. But now, over the weekend, the wife and I kind of got the hankering for steak. We didn't want to go to a restaurant. So I bought a big old pack of steaks over at Sam's Club. And then I said, well, we don't have anything to do this on. You know, I mean, I said, I guess I could just throw it in my cast iron. That would work. You know, but then I decided, yeah, let's do what Joel likes to do every once in a while and buy another fucking kitchen appliance. So I bought a Cuisinart Griddler, and it's essentially – it's very similar to the Foreman grill, but the backside of it has a finish on it as well. Basically, you can fold it all the way out and make it a griddle, like for pancakes, okay? It's also – we'll do like a panini press, so you can make it make paninis on it, and that's what I did a couple days for lunch this week. So – and that was fun too, and with homemade bread too. So everything except for the meat and cheese that I bought on it was homemade. So quick lunches are the order of the day when I've been working from home for well over 6 years now. So that I'm used to that kind of stuff. I very rarely for lunch will order an Uber Eats. Very rarely we'll do that. Now, I did for Monday is usually, especially now, because that's when my son's league is. Monday night, because his league starts, or he likes to leave well before I'm off work. I very rarely will go with him, because by the time I get off work, maybe grab a shower if I have to, because you know I want to admit it. When you work from home, the shower in the morning is not as important. So a lot of times I'll get my coffee, eat my breakfast, do my Bible reading, and then maybe walk the dog, and then start work, you know. And then I'll either take a shower at lunchtime or maybe after work if I take one at all. So it just depends on, you know, how disgusted with myself I am. So, but I very rarely will go with them to league, and so I usually – that's my night to treat myself. So, like, I had my corned beef on Monday. Had a corned beef sub from DiBella's. New York-based sub chain, Pat. Pretty good. But I like my griddler, though. It was cheap. It was, you know, reasonable, like under $80. So, and it lets me, grill up some hamburgers or something. And, you know, considering that I can't grill at the apartment, I'm not even allowed to have one on my patio, technically. Although my smoker's out there, I'm just not allowed to use it. So, but, and we were talking stimulus prior to that, to the start of the show.
And I didn't get my stimulus check.
You didn't.
I might make too much money.
You might.
That's possible.
I got one. Yeah, I got a fairly sizable one, and it actually helps
but
out.
I can't imagine
we're month to month.
If I make too much money and Joel gets a stimulus check, where does he get all the money for all this stuff?
I don't know, man. It's called savings, man.
For some reason, it doesn't seem to me like you're saving.
Saving the
economy,
man.
I'm saving more than
man.
You know. My wife is good at that.
Yes.
My wife is good at that. So the only thing that I did buy with the check was I bought a new lens for my Sony Micro Four Thirds camera.
If I actually get a stimulus check, it will go to buy my Christmas present, which is a 50 cal.
Yeah.
Which one are you getting? Walter's?
The Walter Keller Safety Harbor Firearms, the
nice.
SHTF 50.
I want to try that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yep. The rest of mine's going to go towards paying the exorbitant month-to-month rent for this place, considering I go month-to-month starting April. So I have to pay two months of month-to-month before the house will be ready. And at least I finally...
And then another 2 months after that, and another 2 months.
No.
And then he's
going to
live on the street. I saw a tent.
Nah.
Like a bunch of hobos living in tents in a vacant lot.
actually not far from my old house that actually was happening right in the Kmart. There's a
Joel will get his old van back that was up on blocks.
I never had a van except for my old minivan. I mean, come on. And the minivan's not big enough.
The Traverse is a van.
Get it right, Joe.
But no. So that made the decision to tell, because my wife was like, "I'm going to tell him we're going to move out in the middle of May," and I'm like, "What if the house ain't done until the end of May?"
Then you live in a hotel.
Yeah, and put the rest of put my apartment in storage, you know.
Ask him if the garage is finished on your place. You just put everything in the garage.
There's a door on it today. Man, I had a sleep doctor appointment, which is actually closer to my house, and I decided after the appointment, let's run over and see what's gone on since Sunday. And the garage door's on, and then later on, my wife and son were down.
Wait,
that
are you saying you put the doctor to sleep as opposed to us?
No. No, the doctor just pisses me off because it's one of the. Do you ever go to a practice and there's a certain doctors you don't want to see? And sometimes that's the only doctor that's available, so you have no choice. That's what happened this time. The sleep doctor, I don't know whether the lady I usually see is that. I have to look at their website and see if she's still there. But I didn't find out until, like, this weekend. And he's like, "Your appointment with Dr. Samater." I'm like, "Oh, no."
Well, maybe the doctor drew the short straw.
No, he's the owner. I don't think he drew the short straw. He drives a Porsche Cayenne, okay?
He drew the long straw.
Well, Cayenne doesn't really mean a whole lot.
Well, that's true, because they're not that expensive anymore.
Which one is that, the minivan model?
There's like a turbo
V8 version of that, and there's also a hybrid Cayenne. Yeah, but you're saying he's driving a Cayman S or, you know, Turbo S.
Let's just say he's not hurting. Okay, he's pretty much loaded because he's the guy.
So,
did
we talk any
practice.
Linux tech yet? Because this is, you know, the Linux Link Tech Show. I got a wise.
You know what? That's a good question.
I have a question. I do have a question. It's somewhat tech related. Where'd everybody go?
We're listening.
We're still here. I said waiting for the question.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So, you know, because it kind of pigeons off stimulus check and birthday and stuff like that. And here's my question. And I know. One former person who hasn't been on in a while would have an opinion on this, but this is what I'm curious about. I wanted to get a new chair because the work chair that I have getting kind of old and beat up. And I bought that chair, gosh, about 4 years ago, at least 4 years ago. And it served me well, but now it's, you know, it's beat up and worn out. And the question, and we were looking around
at
a bunch of different chairs, and I'm like, how much should I spend on a chair to get it? Like, how? Because you could go, it seems like the chairs, like, I think this one I bought was like between $100 and $200. And it was a lot better than the chair I
had. I spent like three or four on my last one.
But then we were looking at the 200, you know, the $300
right now.
The $300 range. And then there's like the next step up is like the refurbished $1,000+ chairs, which are under like $1,000. And then there's $1,000 chairs. And I'm like, you almost become paralyzed looking at this. Because, like, I know Manfry worked for a company, I forget what it was, the name of it was, out in Center Valley or something.
And Knoll.
Was that it, Knoll?
Yeah, Knoll, that's right.
And Lincoln bought one of his chairs.
Yeah, Knoll, K-N-O-L-L, yeah.
And could not stop praising it and said how good it is.
All right, so Dan, here's what you do. I know what to do. Unbolt your chair from the current base that it's on. Go to a junkyard, find a Porsche Cayenne, where it's like a U-Pick junkyard, and unbolt the driver's seat from it, and just get a battery to power it. So now you have a six-way adjustable office chair, and just screw it on the old base you had.
There we go.
You know what? You know, you're talking about that, and I'm also kind of debating that too.
Ooh,
as well, Dan.
And if you like it, you can get the one that's air conditioned, so you could have it ventilated. Ooh. You know, when you had beans the night before.
So basically, something to blow the fart dust away. Anyway, but no, here's something I thought of. All right. A guy goes to my church.
A priest, a rabbi, and a minister walk into a bar.
No, shut up, Rich. His wife posted a picture of him sitting there working. Happens to have his cat in his lap because you know how cats are when you're home. All right, so. But he's sitting there. He was sitting at a desk, and then I looked at the chair. I'm like, that's just a living room chair. I thought. Maybe that's what I get to replace my desk chair because my thinking is that's going to be more comfortable. You know what I mean?
I say just get a beanbag.
So, but I'm kind of toying with the same idea too, Dan, because my chair I've been sitting in for, I don't know, it's probably about the same age as yours, Dan. And it's structurally in good shape, but certain things like where my head would rest, like if I lean back or something, just from your head resting there from the grease, the oil in your hair, that part of the chair is kind of starting to look a little rough.
So it's interesting. My house in New York, the office chair I hate. Mm-hmm. And the office chair I have here is okay. And I think both of these chairs were probably under $100. But I'm betting you probably could look up a YouTube channel and look up office chair comparisons and bargains and stuff like that. Because it isn't always that the most expensive, the $1,000 thing is the best. I actually, and not an office chair, but I have like an IKEA chair that I really like.
Right. And see, for me, I end up spending. I usually spend right around the $300 or $400 range because I have to buy the chairs that are just made for big dudes, because I'm a big dude, unfortunately. So,
how's the weight loss program going?
Don't ask.
I got down to 222.
I still have to get rid of my COVID-19. But I'm working on that. But in any event, though,
Hey, I'm in Texas, so I don't want to hear that excuse.
Yeah, I'm with you.
No, because losing weight is a lot more diet than it is exercise. So.
You're right.
Oh, of course,
you're
it
right.
Is.
But chairs. The one I have is like a faux leather / vinyl chair. I'm not gonna. If I buy a replacement, I'm gonna look if I can at all help it. I want to find one that has fabric on it because I just want it to be more comfortable in the summer. Because these chairs, the vinyl chairs, they look great, but when you're sitting in them for 8+ hours a day, it just doesn't feel as comfortable. I think if money was no object, office style chair would be a Herman Miller Aeron. And I have sat in that one for long periods of time. My story with that was when I went to Phoenix, Arizona, probably early in my admin career when I was still working on AIX and learning AIX, and I took my AIX 5L certification at a CRAM course. Okay. So it's basically a 2-day course. I go in on the first day, and then you get the materials and all that just to help study for the test, and they, of course, help you cram for the test as well. They do a little bit of a lecture, all right? And then the next day you come in and you're going to take the test. So I went down to the gas station and grabbed some caffeine and stuff so that I can stay awake.
No sushi?
No,
but,
no
but gas you're, you're not
sushi. Never like, gas station sushi.
You're talking unless about gas 7-11. Station caffeine. Chair, and I'm asking about a fucking share. You know? Yeah. I mean,
well, I'm getting to it till Rich interrupted me. So
yeah, but chair, okay, hold on a second.
You just can't blame everything on me.
Wait, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Hold on a second.
Okay, now you won't let me finish it. Get back to the subject.
Wait, because my question isn't whether you sat in a Herman Miller chair or whatever. Yeah. My question is, does anybody have an expensive chair? Has anybody have experience with expensive chairs? Do they last? I mean, are you looking at, if I bought a chair, like, do they last?
I can tell you they do. Right. Yeah. Yeah, so I can tell you they do.
Right now, the chair I have is a mesh chair, and I really like it.
Right. See, yeah, that's the one. The air on it is that. Now, I've sat in that one at the hotel where I was studying for that test. That's where I sat in one for many hours. So comfort-wise, that was a good chair. But I had another one that I got off of FreeCycle. It was also a Herman Miller chair. It wasn't that particular chair. But in any event, that chair lasts. It was used when I got it, and it lasted for 4 or 5 years until I broke the arm on it. I mean, it looked okay at the end, but it was a little bit beat up too, but it was a fabric chair. So, yeah, those ones are worth the money. So if you want to buy a chair and never have to buy another office chair for 10 years, that's probably what I would go with.
Because the thing I was concerned about is...
But if you don't care... Yeah.
Is if I buy a $100, $100 to $200, maybe $300 chair, I'm probably looking at getting
two years out of it
before I have to, like, this chair I should have replaced a year and a half ago. Like, if I buy a $700 to $2,000, like, is it going to keep going up? Like, oh, between $500 and $1,000, I'm going to get maybe 3 or 4 years out of it. And if I go over $1,000, am I going to get, like, but I
six
don't
months.
Know. 6 months. That's why I'm like, I don't want to go out and spend $1,000 on a chair and then 2 years later be like, man, this is as beat up as a $100 chair. You know what I mean?
Well, I know,
especially
because
I got kids sitting in it all the time.
My in-laws got the really expensive, like, electronic adjustable chairs, the full stand-up ones, all that jazz, and they had to have cost a pretty penny. And 2 years, 3 years before the first one broke, it wasn't excessively long considering how much they must have paid for those chairs for the electronics to start going out, or for the motors to start going out.
Well, I'm not looking to get an electronic chair, man. I just want an office chair. That doesn't make me feel like I got my ass kicked.
I've looked on Amazon at office chairs or gaming chairs just for a little bit of reclinability on them. And I'm not impressed, especially for, like, bigger guys or taller guys. I mean, if you're 6 foot, most of the chairs that you're going to see on Amazon are just not going to do it for you.
Right.
So
I would agree with you. Go to some place like Staples where you can actually, well, that's a good question. Would they let you sit in them with the COVID stuff right now? I bet you if you asked, they would, and then they'd sanitize it. But, like, here, the chair I just mentioned, the Aeron chair, is $1,300. I don't know if I want to spend that on an office chair.
No, I really don't.
I would, though, but I can't say the mesh chairs are what I would look at more, just because I want some circulation, man, especially since I wear shorts all the time.
I'm pretty sure the chair I'm sitting in right now was a curbside pickup.
Actually, I was going to say, Dan, you might want to take a look at, like, auction sites where they might be auctioning off a whole bunch of office furniture. That actually might not be a bad idea.
Facebook Marketplace?
Yeah.
Then again, you're like...
But...
You're taking a risk there. Like,
what risk are you taking? No. Because a lot of people on Facebook Marketplace simply want this stuff out of their house, and they're giving it away.
No, I meant like
essentially,
like, go to eBay. You're taking a little bit of a risk of, hey, if a company's gone and they're getting rid of their chairs.
I'm not talking about eBay. I'm talking about I'm talking about a different kind of more of like business in your area going out of business, all right? They need to get rid of all their crap. They need to liquidate it all. Those kind of websites. Like, for example, one of the schools that Luke went to, ECOT, which is Electronics Classroom of Tomorrow, there was a whole big kind of deal with that one, the state. Some unscrupulous and bad things happened, and they auctioned off everything, and I got three, for $60, I got three of the top-end Keurig machines. And only one of them worked. Well, actually, no, I take that back.
Well, damn, you're not selling me on that shit now, right?
No. Two of them worked. Well, you got to remember too; they sat idle for like a year, so that's probably why one of them didn't work.
Well, I was able
to clean up and get two of them to work. I mean, I got two of them to work. The other one, I just used parts for the other one. Now, I did have to buy, like, these were the kind that are designed to be plugged into the plumbing system. So I did some investigation and found out I can get the reservoir on Amazon and pull that off so that I can just have a reservoir like Keurigs usually have. So, but I mean, I got it dirt cheap, and then like a file cabinet for like $10. And it was so much better than the cheap ass file cabinet you can get at Walmart. So look for websites like that. I'm not talking about eBay. These are websites where you can put the bid in, and when you win, you can pay for it online, and you can drive over to the business and go get it. So, then that way you're not paying shipping either. But that might be better, so you can get a higher quality chair for less money. Yeah, and it just depends on how. I mean, let's face it, people will beat on a company's office chairs. we've all worked in places where we know there's a certain chair in the office you don't want to sit in, because you're gonna wind up on the floor because it was jacked up. But I'm with you, Dan. So that's why I think one of the things I'm thinking about, just maybe a recliner, maybe not, but just a regular chair like you would have in your home, as long as it's not too heavy and I can slide it back and forth, I think that might be better than
an office chair. Right now, Dan.
Yep.
Log into Facebook, go to Facebook Marketplace, and search for office chair, because I just did, and I'm seeing $150, $60, $20, $35.
Free? Yep.
And they're good-looking office chairs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, my Herman Miller lasts for a good, like I said, it took a lot of beating when I had it, the one that I did have. You know, yeah, now I will say this, though. Would I buy that particular one again? No, because it didn't really have much of a recline in it. Because I like to be able to, like if I'm in a Zoom or something and I'm not on camera, I'd like to just kind of lean back, you know?
As opposed to an office chair, I'd prefer to just, you know, have a lazy boy.
I was going to say. So, actually, another thing I'm thinking about doing is buying another one of those USB outboard screens, because on nice days, since I got that screen room, I might do my afternoons in the screen room. Especially if it's an afternoon where I only have Zooms. Then I'll go on camera on purpose, because they'll see me sitting outside. I have to look on Amazon and see how much they want for those kinds of chairs. I'll be right back. Talk amongst yourselves.
So you still looking for a good tablet?
Who, me?
Yeah, are you still looking for a good tablet?
Haven't been. Why?
Oh, I've just been, you know, searching around, seeing what's good out there. And about the best I can see right now, price to performance, is probably either the Dell Latitude 5285 in the $150 to $200 range, or the Dell Latitude 5290 in the $180 to $400 range.
Is that used or new?
Used.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because I thought I just looked at one. No, that's a 2000. No, the Dell Latitude 12. So, 5000. So, Dell Latitude. So, you're picking these up off of what? Facebook Marketplace?
eBay. No, eBay? It's eBay. Yeah.
How old are those?
What, 2016 and 2017, respectively.
And what are you running on them?
Well, right now I'm running Linux Mint on a 5285, but it's the i3 version. But I want the 5290. I don't want the i7 version because there isn't that much of a performance difference between the i5 and i7 version, other than the fact that the i7 version comes in a 16 gig of RAM. But the 8 gig of RAM on a tablet should be plenty.
So everything's working on that with Linux Mint?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, on this one, I thought it was just going to be a cable replacement. I did the cable replacement. There's still lines in the screen, so it's going to end up on the 5285. So it's going to end up being a set-top box. And the only issue with it that I have come across, because it installed fine, worked fine, was with the screen rotation, which I could fix on my own eventually by writing my own scripts. The screen would rotate, but the touch screen wouldn't. So the touches were mismapped. And that is not an overly difficult fix.
Right. Now, how much did you pay for that?
It came out to $60, $62. Huh. And that was because I ordered one that was just supposed to have the lines in the screen. And then I plugged it in and it lit on fire.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Actually, fire came out of it?
The magic smoke came out.
Oh, that.
Yeah. And like the second time I plugged it in, the magic smoke came out. And so I pinged the guy and told him, you know, this is what happened. And the first thing he did was send me a message back. You bought it as is, non-functional. And the description of it actually said working in it. And so he just looked at it again and sent me my money back. And yeah, so I ordered another motherboard for it for half the cost, and voila. I did get the i3 motherboard instead of the i5 motherboard, but I wanted to test things on it. So yeah, it works fine, except for the screen.
Why? How much? How difficult was it to put a new motherboard in there?
Not overly difficult. I mean, there's quite a few screws and a few connectors that you have to be careful with because they're very, like, delicate connections, but nothing excessive, and probably 20 minutes worth of work.
Oh, so you didn't have to, like, heat the seals off or anything.
That's nice. Actually, it's really, really simple to replace the screens on those. The only problem is that the screens cost like $150.
Well, at that point, you might as well just buy another one, right?
Yeah, almost.
Well, how many do you have right now?
I have the 5285 right now, but I'm going to order the 5290.
So if you had a couple of them, chances are you could just replace the screen from one and put it on another.
Yeah. And if they were a little bit cheaper, or if I could find, you know, because I think that from what I've read, some of the 5290 screens are compatible with the 5285 and vice versa. So if they were a little bit cheaper to buy them, you know, not working, then I would buy more and then just swap parts until I had a couple that were working.
Chairs or headphones?
Tablets.
Tablets.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I was doing with the Venue series, the Dell Venue 11 Pro series, was I'd find a really good price, and like they wouldn't know that the reason it wasn't working was because they didn't have the right charger, and so I'd get them for like $40 to $80 and
nice,
really good tablets. And then mostly I didn't even have to worry about swapping parts, but yeah, it's relatively easy on those to swap batteries, swap hard drives. The Wi-Fi cards are really cheap to buy more and slide them in there. So, yeah.
Now, see, I'm debating on, I still have my old iPad, and it still works very well. I just upgraded. And I tried to set it up for Luke. And I tried, was trying, I'm like, come here, Luke, I need you to do this. And he just didn't want to do anything. So I'm like, well, screw you, I'll just keep it. So what I may do is I may set up a when we move in, I might just find a place in the house and stick it on the wall, like maybe in my kitchen or something, because it'd be great for just watching stuff on while I'm cooking or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
works fine for that, you know. But I will not spend what I just saw on there is a new accessory from Kensington for the iPad called the Kensington Studio Dock. And I thought, well, that kind of sounds interesting, because basically it has a way that you can, when you're sitting at your desk, you have it sitting on that, and it has like a USB-C hub and stuff, so you can have like a hard drive plugged into it and crap like that. All right, I thought, that kind of looks cool. How much is it? Like $400. I'm like, that's not that cool.
Pretty much.
I can build my own by buying a USB-C, buying or using one of the ones that I already have, a USB-C hub, and have essentially the same thing. The only thing I'd have to do is manufacture a mount so that I can flip it from portrait to landscape, you know, and I can still do everything that that did for far less than $400. Yeah, exactly. Thank
it's
you.
It's not hard to make a ball joint with a freaking 3D printer.
No, it's not. But so it's like, yeah. And see, and actually, things like that, like organization things around the office and home, are things I actually like to print. Like I made a little thing that I have in my bathroom that has like my deodorant and my cologne and for lack of a better word, ball powder, because I started using Chassis men's. It's like a powder you can put on your nuts so that they don't feel all swampy, you know? So, because I like to feel nice. But anyway, but it's like, you know, I won't spend lots of money on little plastic things like that. Like if I need a headphone hanger for my desk at home, I make it, you know, and it works just as well as the one I would spend $10 or $12 for.
Yeah, I've printed many headphone hangers. Granted, I have a lot of headphones.
True. Now the exception to that is I did buy a new Laxi iPad stand, which is made out of metal, and that I would buy again, but it wasn't expensive. It wasn't $400. It was like $20 maybe, and it's completely made on metal, and it's wonderful. It's designed to lift the tablet off of the tables, so you can actually slide something under the iPad, and it's universal too. I don't have to just use it with my iPad. I can use it with other things too. So, but and I like it because it's adjustable. So, but so things like that are like I designed a little thumb drive holder that sits on my desk where my thumb drives are, and each thumb drive has its own little cubby. and I can put them in there and they don't get lost. But tablets, though, I just so wish there was a cheap Android tablet that's actually good out there. And I'm sorry, there just really aren't any.
True. Not in the cheap market, anyway. You really got to spend money on a quality Samsung tablet.
That's the only one that's worth it to buy for me. The only one that you're going to have more than maybe 6 months worth of updates on, and that's it. You know.
Which is why you go for a Windows tablet.
Right. Maybe a Lenovo, you know.
For a while, some of the Nexus tablets were good, but I haven't heard anything really good coming out of that range.
Yeah, that was my absolute favorite tablet of all time that I had, was my Nexus 7, until it just got to be too slow. And yes, I'm old. I need the bigger screen. Right, Dan?
That's right.
The only problem is, though, like my Surface, it's got a 4K screen on it, okay? And one thing I found with the higher res laptop screens, as well as the one on my Surface, I found this out last week. We had, like, our last three load tests on JMeter of all time. We're not going to deliver the service anymore because it's not contractually in anybody's contract. Okay. Yeah. So, and we were running, like, in my case, it was just maybe two, maybe three of us, and we needed all three so that we can get a sufficient load between all of our laptops. And in my case, I ended up running two JMeter sessions, one on my work laptop and then one on my Surface. And the one thing I found out is that with Java-based applications on the high-res screens, they're pretty freaking awful. They don't scale well. And the text is damn tiny. So, now we are trying to, one thing that we are kind of trying to do is we're trying to think of how we can do like a real-time load test, I don't want to say load test because that would be the wrong thing, because we don't want to put load on the prod systems that's artificial, but basically have a way to measure website performance and page the on-call admin if it goes past a certain point. You know what I mean? So that's kind of one thing we're kind of searching for. We use Datadog. So Datadog Synthetics can do that somewhat, in that you set, like, when you set your synthetic up, you can set the delays so that, you know, when it's normally up and you have normal performance, that it won't send a page, but then you can have it, if it's too long to log in, it will page the on-call. So I think we've got most of that now I'm thinking about it, but I think one of the things we would like to have is more measurements, you know, so that we know things like, is the Java heap size getting too large, or are we running a risk of going over the amount of allocated Java heap for one of our listeners? You know, and if so, page the admin. Well, part of the problem is those processes are documented such, you know, their instrumentation's not sufficient enough that we can plug that into Datadog so that we can look at that statistic in a real-time manner. So the only tool we had look at that is the admin tool, and that's an interactive tool that you have to look have loaded on a laptop or in our case a VM. So I don't know, that's just some of the things I've been working on, that and we did a successful deployment of Tomcat via Jenkins last week. And unfortunately, we didn't deploy the service on it because we found out that we didn't have the particular service we were talking about requires an API key that only the client can get. we don't have a login to that website, even though the website is one that our company runs. They don't give us login and rights to get into those so that we can generate the key for them, which sucks. but so we were mostly successful. We got that and Rabbit deployed with no problems. So it's basically all we have to do is get the API key, build the WAR file, and deploy it. So that's my tales of the cloud, I guess. I need to start getting my practitioner study course going on the weekends. I need to start taking the more practice tests.
I've been doing a lot of GitHub Actions this past week, and I'll tell you what, they're
cool.
They're a lot of fun, man. Sometimes they're a little frustrating, especially like when some of the documentation is a little out of date, or you're trying to find stuff, or you're actually using an action that somebody else has used. What I've been doing is, what's nice is somebody wrote a tool called ACT, which allows you to locally run your GitHub Actions. So wait, the way GitHub Actions work is that you have an event type that occurs, and that's what kicks them off. So event types correspond to different things, obviously, in GitHub. For like, if you were to commit files, that could be on push, that could be an event type. When you do a pull request, that is an event type. When code gets merged into a specific branch, that is an event type. So you write a workflow that targets one or more event types, and then kicks off a series of jobs that can transpire in there. And so what ACT does, so like I wrote some scripts, event types of when we do the pull request, and also when we do merging into our defined branch, main branch, or in our case it's the stage branch, that it starts the workflow process and executes jobs. So you can run this locally, which is nice. Now, I ran into some caveats with it, in that in testing a pull request, you tell it you want it to act to simulate the event type pull request, and it runs it, and then the couple of the work jobs, the jobs I had in there, were making use of, you know, stuff like, hey, make sure that we have the Jira ticket in the PR title, and that was running an action that would pull down, would get the PR information and do that. Well, the problem is when you run locally, you don't have the PR information unless you pass to it a event payload. And so that's what I had to do. I had to construct an event payload for a pull request. And it was pretty simple to do, but it took a little bit of digging around. So what I did to make it simpler for myself is just use the GitHub API and pull down the information of the pull request that I already had out there. Now, of course, you look at that and say, well, if I'm developing an event flow pull request, a work flow on a pull request, if I'm going to test it, I don't want to have to actually have a pull request out there, because that kind of defeats the purpose of testing it locally if I already have to open up a pull request to get it. You don't. So now there's a caveat I ran, is I haven't figured out how to solve that part yet. But I figured out how to do it, got down enough that all I had to do to make this work for 90% of what I wanted to do in passing it a GitHub event for the pull request, which worked out pretty well. And so designing that, I figured, hey, it's not that hard to get the pull request title, because we're already checking out a pull request
Therefore, we don't really need a separate GitHub Action that has a bunch of other functionality, which the original thing was PR and commit checker that you could send to it. You could tell it, hey, look for a regular expression in the PR title and or all the commit messages. So originally, I kind of took it that it would look through all the commit messages in that pull request and see if there was an instance of the ticket in there. And okay, well, no, it's not any one of those. It has to be in every single one. So it would fail if you made a commit message without the ticket number in it. So we didn't use that. And then with the PR title, we got to that point where when I started testing it with ACT, I'm like, this is overkill. I could just, that PR title is already available as a variable inside the GitHub workflow itself. I can just do a check to see whether what we're looking for in the structure of the ticket, whether that Jira ticket number is in there. And so that made that a little bit easier. So that kind of pushed aside one of the other problems that I was having with it. Now, the other thing was, so this is a little different than our normal node-based applications. This is a PHP application. And like with Node, you have package JSON and you put a version in there, and it's easy to bump the version of the package. So typically the way that we do this when we bump our version is once the pull request is merged, goes through all the testing, and then it's in there, and that kicks off a stage that it checks for a commit message when it's merged to see whether it has bumped the version or not. And if it hasn't, which it shouldn't have, it bumps the version, updates that package JSON file, writes it back to the branch in the repo, the main branch, and then it checks it out, builds the application, builds Docker, production Docker container, and then pushes that out and deploys it to production, and it's available in our Quay repository. And that makes it simple. And then, so we had to do a catch on that too, because once it updates on the merge of, or the commit, once it's merged in, there's an update on the branch, you have to double check. It would keep running continuously forever in a loop, constantly bumping the version, unless you put a check in there that we have a check and say, hey, was the version bumped? If so, don't do anything. Stop. You're done. Right? But with the PHP applications don't have a package JSON. So they're not typically versioned in that way, right? And what we're doing here, it's, and I think I spoke about this before, we're using WordPress, Gutenberg editor for our editor for the CMS system that we have. And they kind of like the WordPress plugin architecture to manage this editor process. And we're not using the WordPress as a CMS itself. We just want, they want that structure of the editor. And they liked it, and it was like the best in class. So essentially, we're going with VIP WordPress, and it's a commercial product. And all we're doing is, what they do is they manage WordPress for you as a whole. You can then customize it and configure it through the WP content directory with your own plugins and your own themes and stuff like that. So it's kind of like we're writing plugins for this to basically do exactly what we want and to interact with our system. So there's no version file, so to speak, in there, but we want to version it. And then we're also putting in a change log. So I was like, okay, we're going to start this off. We're just going to have a plain text file that just lists the version. That's all we really need to do. And we can easily manage that. But for starting purposes, it was we're going to put a changelog in there, and one of the requirements on a pull request is that you have to have a JIRA ticket in the title, and then you have to have the JIRA ticket in the change. It has to be in the changelog of your entry, and it has to be modified. Like, you look at this in the pull request, like, how do we know that they made a change to the changelog, or they should have updated it? Well, they should have updated it because in the pull request, it should have that changelog listed as one of the files that was updated. And so that, it's easy to do, but the problem is, how do you get that and test it locally with ACT? What ends up happening, and I haven't figured this part out yet completely, is with ACT, and I pass it the pull request payload, the pull request payload, if you look at the GitHub API, there's two different payloads that you get. One is you can actually get the information for your pull request, and that's whatever the number of the pull request is when you call it. But then there's also, you can tack onto that files, and then that's going to give you a list of the files in that pull request that have changed. But there's nothing that gives you all of that information together, so I can't easily construct a test payload based upon that. Now, what ends up happening with this actual GitHub action that we're doing, it's based off of a Node application, the action itself, so it's using the GitHub actions library in Node, and it's looking at the pull request payload, getting the reference number of the head and the reference number of the base, and it's using that to make a call out to the API to pull back the information of the changed files. But then that, again, requires that you have a pull request out there that says, hey, here are the changed files, and this is in the change file. So it kind of defeats that purpose of being able to test locally with ACT. That's the part I have not figured out how to do yet, is whether I want to continue using that action that I'm the action that I'm using to get that, and then I have to figure out how to mock that. I have no idea how to do that locally yet. Or I just want to figure out how to do it on my own and make sure that file changed or whatever. So that was fun stuff to do. Not fun is one of the things that's not fun is when you're trying to do something like, I need to find whether or not the way that I check to see whether or not the JIRA ticket was in the PR title was to use a regular expression with grep. It was really easy. I can echo out the PR title, pass it through grep, and then see whether this the ticket format is in there, and if it matches that format, good, we pass. If it doesn't, if we're missing that ticket, like the JIRA ticket number, now of course we don't know what the JIRA ticket number is, we just know that it should follow this format of being CE dash or APIs dash and then a number string, and that's easy enough to do. Now, what I wanted to do when I check for the presence of the ticket in the changelog file, it would be a similar grep. It's like, hey, is the ticket that we got in the PR title, right? We pull that out, we grep, get that with that same grep command, but instead of like piping it through to check and see whether it's in there, you pull it out of there because it's in there. And that value is right there for you. And then you check whether that ticket number is in the change log. But for some reason, it was such a pain in the ass to be able to get that ticket number out and then pass it through to check. I tried so many different things, and it wasn't until I've had to echo it to a environmental variable inside the GitHub action, and the first thing I saw worked like a charm, and I ran it through ACT, and ACT was really happy, and I pushed it up to GitHub, and it failed because it was a deprecated call, and they replaced it. It was insecure, which that kind of sucks. The documentation I was reading was a little out of date, but then I fixed it with the new documentation. It was really dead easy to fix it. But it was still kind of like pissed off after an hour of struggling with this thing to finally get it working, only to be told, nah, you did it wrong again, because it's deprecated. You got to do it a different way. And if I would have just had the different way to begin with, like the way it's supposed to, it was easy to find, that would have been great. One of the things that is a pain about GitHub Actions is that the way it's structured is you have your workflow, and then you have jobs, and then jobs could have one or more steps under them, right? And then you could use outputs from one step in another step, right? But you can't easily use the outputs of a step in one job into another job steps. So once, and it, you know, when you think about how it works, it kind of makes a little bit of sense, because a lot of times what you're running in a job is going to take place in a container. So that job, all the steps in that job are going to run on a container, and when those steps are finished, the container's gone. And then if you have another job, that's going to start a whole other container and run the steps in there. So there's not an easy way to pass values between jobs. What you can do is you can save artifacts, which is kind of like writing a file out with the information that you need.
Documentation,
and
yeah.
Then it's store it as an artifact, which the next job, like the next job that runs in the steps in there, could retrieve that artifact and get the information out of there and then use it like that. And that seems like just to do the get the JIRA ticket number, like I would love to have done that up in the first job, which was, hey, check the JIRA, whether the PR title has a JIRA ticket. Been great to then just take that and save it into a variable that I could use in the other job, which was, hey, let's double check the change log here and make sure that it's changed, and then the JIRA ticket is in there, but I couldn't easily get the ticket from the value of the ticket in the other job into the steps in the second job. So I just repeated that one line in there, which was not a big deal.
Cool.
But yeah, it's GitHub Actions. I like it a lot better than Jenkins, man. Holy crap, is it a lot easier to use than Jenkins. Especially with ACT. Once you get it down, once you start getting an understanding of how to do these things, it's really, really easy to do. And a lot of fun.
Makes me wish I could go there, but we're full on Jenkins, so.
Yeah, well, I hear
it is what it is. But speaking of learning a good stuff here, every once in a while I'll go over to Humble Bundle and I'm tempted. And that's today. They have a bundle now with pocket references for various things. Now the highest level, I'll just read it from the highest level, $18. We'll get you a Git pocket reference, Python pocket reference, Linux pocket guide, Bash pocket reference, machine learning pocket reference that's working with structured data in Python. All right. And paying $10 or more. So basically, if you only want to pay $10, you'll get everything from here on up. So at the $10 level, you have a C++ pocket reference, a regular expression pocket reference, a C# 8.0 pocket reference, a Java pocket guide, and a C pocket guide. The $1 level, which is the lowest you can pay, You get the Windows PowerShell reference, SQL Pocket Guide, VI and Vim Editor Pocket Guide, and a grep Pocket Guide, and the set in awk Pocket Guide. For $1, you get those five pocket guides. So good stuff. Humblebundle.com.
Like each one of these levels has like two or three that I'm interested in, and then or two or three that I'm not. Like I have absolutely no interest in the C++ or the C or the Java or the C#. But the regular expression, yeah.
And the SEDNAWC and the definitely the machine learning one. The machine learning one definitely looks good. There's also, if you look in their books bundle, they have a DIY home and hobby books bundle that also looks kind of cool. Let me see what they got on there for that bundle.
Home winemaking, hobby farming, cooking basics.
Cooking basics,
how to fix everything. Bike repair and maintenance.
Bunch of dummy books. That's what they are, all dummy book. Electronic projects for dummies. Raising goats for dummies. 30-minute meals for dummies. I'd buy that just by itself.
Pairing food and wine for dummies.
Decluttering for dummies. Yeah, you get a lot of books for fairly low prices. Have you ever bought books from Humble Bundle? I'm wondering what format.
I did a long time ago. I think you can get PDF or EPUB. They might do Mobi too.
Okay. There's also a Let's Cook Together bundle. Dude, they know what we want, man. Humble Bundle knows what we want. There's a whole bunch of stuff on here I would like this time. Hey, cybersecurity one.
Where's the Let's Cook?
Right next to the DIY Home and Hobby.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking right over top. What do they have here? Cupcakes and parties, honeys and oats, cast iron skillet, my rice bowl.
Cast iron skillet is my favorite pan. No question.
Oh, I shouldn't bring this up. I should save it for next week.
What? Air frying?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'll save it for next week. We gotta close this out. I gotta
get it's getting late. And I got a 1 a.m. change, too.
And Joe was up late.
Seems like I always am.
Up early, yeah. You know what, I'm curious. I'd like to know what formats that the books actually come in. Like
probably EPUB.
Because I know I thought there was PDF, maybe EPUB. Holy crap, there's a lot of books in that $18 bundle that you could get.
The cooking one, yeah.
I wish they'd tell you that, like, format. The books, ebooks, and bundles are available in EPUB format, so they work on your computer. You read the Bible. Reading programs can be found here. So EPUB format. You know what? Holy crap, I don't know.
That's all. Actually kind of a nice, interesting thing there. I'm back on the Pocket Reference one. And if you click on the expansion for choose where your money goes, you can choose how much money O'Reilly gets, how much money Code for America gets, and how much money Humble Tip gets. Because basically these are all for technically a charitable donation.
I guess the Kindle, if you use the Kindle application, like a lot of my stuff I got from Amazon, so I use Kindle. I mean, there's a bunch of EPUB book readers that you can use, but I guess apparently the Kindle app will do EPUB and PDF format. Although I absolutely, I hate reading PDF books in PDF format because it just never seems to save the
doesn't save your spot in some cases.
Yeah, and a lot of times.
But you see, for a reference, a pocket reference, PDF probably is not so bad because it's not like those are going to be super huge.
Yeah. All right, let me play this out. Let's play this out of here.
Cool.
All right, here we go. Your promo.
Oh my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, Joel, is I got a whetstone. I was going to talk about that, but I'll save it for next week.
Nice. A big one?
No, I mean, it's about 8 inches long and 2.5.
That's fairly large. That's fairly large. That's fairly large. My new knife came with a little one. I don't have any honing oil here though, so I could only do it with the stone dry right now. But like today, I carried my Opinel, which that's one of my favorite knives, and it's dirt cheap too. I mean, for as quality of a knife it is, it's worth every dollar of it. It's like a $20 knife. Yeah, it's funny. The Everyday Blade group on Facebook, they're all like, I got my Stimmy. What knife I'm gonna buy? I'm like, I'm not buying a knife. I don't need any knives anymore, or any more knives, I should say. That's not to say I don't want one or wouldn't go buy one, but it's got like I got other things I need to spend it on. Well, I have my sleep doctor appointment. It seems like every dang time I go to see this one certain sleep doctor, he ends up scheduling me for a sleep study. Well. Not till May, though.
They're saying they think your pressure changed?
No, I don't think it's changed. I think it's fine. That's my opinion. But they said that he wants a titration study because I'll get a new machine in December because I'm eligible for one. And it's a good idea to replace those things from time to time.
So you had tornado warning alarms going off this morning, Joe?
Storm warning alarm, yeah. It wasn't a tornado warning. It was a winter storm. So there were high winds and there was hail, but it was not tornado weather.
Came out and said, "Hail Satan."
Something like that.
Yeah.
No, he said, "Hail no."
And I didn't jump directly up out of bed when the storm warning went off. So the wife's yelling at me that I need to get up because the tornado warning's going off. And it's like, no, no, I don't.
So you have one of those same radios for the weather radio? Yeah, we used to have one plugged in all the time. I don't know whatever happened to it.
No, no, no. This is just like the water tower has a siren attached to it.
Oh.
It's very common in the Midwest. It really is. But,
But why would they do that for a winter storm warning? That doesn't make sense.
Evidently, it was bad enough. The winds were high enough. The hail was big enough. I don't freaking know. I wish they hadn't. I mean, seriously.
Just swinging in the breeze.
Yeah.
That's right, Pete.
Even if there is a tornado, there's only like one room in my house without windows in it. And it's a very tiny bathroom, and not everybody's going to fit in there. So you know what?
No.
Everybody else can go in there. I'm going to stay in bed because either the house is going to get knocked over and I'm going to die, or it's not going to get knocked over and I'm going to be just fine and I'm okay either way.
Joe's like, fuck it. Take me on, man.
I've been in the middle of tornadoes before, and
same.
You know, this house has been here for 20 years now, and I assume it's still going to be here tomorrow. And if the house gets knocked down, I really don't care if we're in that tiny little bathroom on the first floor. It's not going to help.
Nope. But I got a chance, the rare chance during the week to drive by the house. Because I had my sleep doctor appointment, and they were putting the garage door in and wrapping it.
They're putting a garage door in, but there was no garage, right?
No, there's a garage.
It's just a freestanding door, you know,
right.
Out in the middle of nowhere.
No, they're putting the wrap that goes on before they put the siding on.
The slab is incorrect, so once they actually finish building the house, the inspectors are going to come by and say, no, you have to redo everything. You have to take it down to nothing and redo it.
Yeah, we would not be that far if that was the case, but no. I don't know what went on inside the house. For all I know, there might be other stuff. I didn't want to interrupt them, so I basically just snapped a pic and drove off, you know, because there's a whole crew there working today. But that last weekend I went in and they had all the plumbing is completely done. The only thing it's not is like the finishing plumbing, like putting the sinks in and stuff, but you got to add the cabinet work in there first, so... So that's good.
Did everybody get their stimulus money?
I did this morning.
Yep. Saturday.
Money showed up.
I did that, and I ordered a lens for my Sony camera because I didn't have a telephoto lens, so I ordered that. I actually well,
that, that's a whole topic. What are you getting, what are you gonna stimulate with?
Yeah.
Before.
Well, that's the only thing I'm getting. Unless you want to count the espresso Nespresso pods that just ordered. I don't count that. That's a need. Some people will say that's a want, but no, that's a need. I need espresso.
Has anybody been keeping an eye on cryptocurrencies?
Not really.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, like, basic attention token was up like 33% today. It was up over a dollar. It's at $1.23 right now. I think the highest it was today was $1.31. And then Litecoin is back over $200 again. And Bitcoin is sitting right under $60,000 again. And I know it's gone over $60,000 in the last, like, month. So it has just been all over the place.
My favorite is the influencers and the Holly weirdos are all into NFT or non-fungible token art.
Yeah, it's not even just the Hollywood people. It's any type of influencer that is doing NFT now. But, you know, a couple of people made multi millions of dollars selling NFT, so everybody is jumping on that bandwagon real quick.
Yeah. Even though they don't even know what it is in some cases, which is funny. They're like, I want to do an NFT project. I'm like, do you even know what the hell you're talking about?
No, but I know I can make millions.
Right. That's why this is one of those things where I don't even think it's worth talking on a show because, first off, I think it's stupid. You know,
it's hard to explain exactly what an NFT is. I mean, I kind of understand, but being able to explain it to somebody else, probably not.
Right. It's basically art secured by the same thing Bitcoin is.
Blockchain.
From what I've gathered. Blockchain, yeah, correct. And I'm like, whatever. Just get my freaking lens here so I can use it this weekend. I think if the lens arrives when it says it should get here Friday. So if it arrives and it works fine, I'm planning on just taking my Sony to church to do the. I take pictures every week at church, and I want to do that. So, not part of the stimulus spending, but I got a gift card at work, and I ordered a 16-port switch for the office here. So that way I have
anybody get a stimulus
plenty of switches.
Check?
Yes, I did.
We were just talking about that.
Really?
Yep.
Did you not get one?
Actually, Pat, you probably made out. You got a couple kids. You probably made out pretty good on that.
Yeah, it was nice.
Would it have been direct deposited?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. If you did direct deposit for your taxes, you got it.
Yep. I'm basically not paying taxes in 2020.
It doesn't look like it.
Not when you really look at it, because we were paying too much in anyway. So I'm gonna get a tax refund as well.
I bet your tax return was direct deposited into Mark Spencer's account, wasn't it, Rich?
I told you not to talk about that. And happy birthday, Dan.
Actually, I thought it was Kel-Tex, maybe.
Thank you, Rich.
Yeah, Chad from Kel-Tec got my money.
Yeah.
Which Kel-Tec?
What's Kel-Tec?
Which
Kel-Tec?
Which? I'm sorry.
Oh, which? Yes.
Don't have a boy Kel-Tec in a year.
Don't ever say that again, Pat. You're sorry to interrupt. How dare you? Have you not listened to anybody else on this show?
Hey, are you guys going to sell this year? Is it going to happen? Like the
it's
website?
Virtual.
Is it virtual?
Hold on. Hotel reservations.
I got an email about it.
So it's off?
No. I got an email that was virtual.
Well, they've always kind of done virtual, but hold on. Let me look.
Because they had hotel reservations up there.
I may, only because I like it better than Goshen.
I'm going to go.
Let me see. Nope. Real life event, June. Hold on. Never mind. It's not happening. Virtual event, June 11th through the 13th, 2021. Real life event, June 10th through 12th, 2022. So it's not going to happen.
Oh, that sucks.
Yep. This is due to restrictions that still maintain in place by Governor Cooper in North Carolina regarding mass gatherings. We cannot hold self 2021 self in person. So, Goshen, Midwest Rap Rap Festival for 2021, the one I was going to go to last year around this time that got canceled.
Start the show.
There's a show?
Yeah. Well.
Of course there is.
Let's go. Give me count around.